heart beats faster and faster.
This is the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. It was a dark and stormy night, and up rose our fearless captain, Captain Horatio, and he told a story, and it went like this. It was a dark and stormy night, and up rose our fearless captain, Captain Horatio, and he told a story, and it went like this. It was a dark and stormy night, and up rose our fearless... enough with that. This is Paranormal Broadcasting, where we try to do everything to keep you entertained, because we have no idea what else to do on a Sunday night. We'll be opening up the phone lines a little later, and we'll be watching our chat room all night long. You can log into that chat room by going to our website at www.ghostanddemon.com. And this is the Demon Hunter, Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter, and I am joined tonight with our crypto specialist, Magnus. Hello, Magnus.
Hello, hello. I'm here.
Our buddy Sean B. has a few internet problems because he was building a new studio, and unfortunately he can't be with us here tonight, but he will be with us again soon. Until then, Magnus has graciously agreed to join us here tonight.
And I took a lot of caffeine to make sure I was as close to being as awesome as Sean can be, but we'll see.
Well, that's tough, but we appreciate it. We really do. And this is the Sunday, September 21st. Episode of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show is independently produced by Nathan Schoonover and Sean Burris and is broadcast live on Omnisound, KarmaCast, and Planet Paranormal Radio, and is recorded for Blog Talk Radio. Oh, no, we're not recorded for Blog Talk Radio anymore. Forgive me for that. We are recorded for Para X Radio and BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network.
Yay.
So, tonight,
I'm a cheering section today.
Woohoo! Woohoo! Yay! Tonight, our special guests are Dr. Barry Taff, formerly a UCLA professor. He is a parapsychologist, and you may have seen some of his work because it later became known famously to be in the movie Entity. And later on this evening, we will be joined by our friend, the weird, the wonderful Charlie Carlson of Weird Florida. We'll also have our usual wonderful bits by Gigi, our very own gore girl with Inside the Horror, and Sean's not here. It's my job to mess it up. Dead Letters with Chrissy P. So.
Yay.
Until then, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast, and it starts right now.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Original Bad Boys of Paranormal,
and your host for tonight's show, Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
Yes.
That voice is the scariest part of the whole thing, I tell you.
That's Bob.
Oh, is that Bob?
Bob the Demon.
Has Bob lost weight? It seems a little different.
Actually,
little different.
Bob has lost a lot of weight. He can actually sit on the top of one of my canes now, and no problem.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's good for him, I guess. I'm trying to lose some weight myself. I can't quite sit on the top of a cane yet. A pylon, perhaps.
It depends on the size of the cane, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I'm excited. I'm happy to be back. I love this stuff. I was actually got a lot of messages from last time I was on the show. People actually thought it well. I paid them all off, mind you, but they still told me I did well.
Hey, we pay them off every week, you know. It's but those of you who are loyal listeners, don't think we're going to start paying you off, because we need your loyalty to be able to afford and pay for all that other stuff that's going on.
Exactly. So I'm actually excited about the show. It's pretty cool. Like, Charlie Colston from The Weird Florida. I'm actually a huge fanatic of The Weird books, everything else about it. So, and also, he has hair and a mustache that I'm very envious of.
He does. He has great hair. He does. I really like to get his hair.
Yeah, that definitely is. I think that's part of Weird Florida itself, is how amazing his hair is.
I hear you've moved into a new place, Magnus.
I have. I have now bought a house. I am in the large, rather spacious home of my, I call it the HQ, since I am now using this as my base of operations for ghost hunting, doing other events and adventures. And if people can hear in the background, there may be some clicking sounds. My new partner in crime, I just adopted a new Boston Terrier puppy. He's about 11 months old.
What's his name?
In need of a home. Say again?
What's his name?
Phineas.
Phineas.
Nice little
Phineas, the bug-eyed terrier.
Yeah, very much so. Phineas, I don't know, he needs like one of those like long names, like Phineas, Alabaster, Gizmo, Magnus, Apollo, Puppy, something. Yeah, I'm talking about you. He now is looking at me, he's like, what are you talking about? I heard my name, and you're proving that you're a retard in front of other people. Yeah.
I'll tell you, it has been a wild and crazy week because our co-host, Sean Burris, also bought a house. He's working hard at getting that all together, so he was unable to join us here tonight. It was a bit of a shame because I was really looking forward to getting back after a week off, and but he's listening in on the phone lines from what I've been told. He might check in with us later, so that'd be cool.
Awesome. So the real question of the paranormal world is, when is Nathan Schoonover going to hear the Demon Hunter going to actually settle down and buy a house of his own?
See, the Demon Hunter doesn't buy houses because the Demon Hunter, despite the fact that it's a buyer's market, doesn't like the idea of buying a house. He does not believe they are an investment. He believes they are a liability because you work for years to pay for them, and if you miss a few payments because you're out of work or have a problem, they take away your investment and everything you've put into it. So I've had that happen. Don't care to have it happen again.
Ah, gotcha. You've been burnt once, huh?
Yeah, burnt once. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm a dope. Then
fool me 14 times. That's something different.
Yeah, that's my that should be my slogan right there.
Yeah, I say the same thing, but usually in the sexual context. But hey, that's my own fault there. So this is actually a very awesome time. How's everything going with you? Anything exciting or new? I have we have the houses. Sean and I have the houses to talk about, and I want to hear more about the ghost hunters. Demon hunters kind of thing. The dog is bothering me now. She's cute as hell. Sorry.
You have no choice but to pay attention.
I'll send a picture. I'll post it online to see what this dog's doing right now.
I actually have some neat stuff coming up. I'm looking forward to next week. We are going to go down to the Mid-South Paranormal Conference. Sean and I will be down there to our only thing really down there besides promoting the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show will be to host the Sound Like the Booth Brothers contest. If you were afraid to send in your clips on the show, this will be your chance to do it live. Of course, Sean and I will probably be doing our imitations of the Booth Brothers because we can't help it. We love doing it so much. anybody who's that successful, you gotta, you know, what's the saying that imitation is the highest form of flattery or
the highest insult, depending on who comments you. I'm basing this totally on an SNL skit with the Sarah Palin one because I think we're bitching about that quite a bit. So.
Well, you know, it's one of those fun things. I'm really looking forward to getting down there and seeing some folks. And Sean and I and Jason Gowan are going to work on some other projects together, and we're going to meet to talk about that.
Very cool.
After that, I get to come home for 2 days before I head off to the Haunted Hickory conference down in Hickory, North Carolina. So 1 week down in Louisville, Kentucky, then next week down in Hickory, North Carolina. Then I get to come home and spend a few days doing some radio stuff up here. And the next thing you know, it's going to be Halloween, my favorite time of the year.
Same here. This is my thing. I'm happy about having a house finally on this time of year because I'm hoping to have some big parties. I'm actually also trying to work at some charity events, too, in Rochester. I'm setting up a charity event. This kind of sounds kind of weird, but it hasn't quite come together yet. But it's the This will be dorky, but the Zombie Prom. The Greater Rochester Zombie Prom. And it's actually to raise money for brain cancer. So
Brains.
Yeah, exactly. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It's the kind of thing. I've actually lost many family members from actually brain cancer. So this is my way of help dealing with it with my tongue-in-cheek sort of odd humor. I'm hoping to have a big charity event. It's still coming together. Probably won't be till after Halloween. But it'll be very fun.
Well, you know, normally around this time, Sean and I would be looking into some paranormal news, but I'm not the news guy, and I don't really have any paranormal news out there. You know, we've done a lot of stuff recently talking about the Bigfoot, the iced-up Bigfoot. You're a cryptozoologist. How did you feel about that whole thing with Bigfoot? They're claiming they had a Bigfoot on ice, and it turned out to be a costume.
It was kind of rough because that was actually, and one of the people that was obviously faking it was a police officer too, right? That's the story.
It is, and I believe he has lost his job as a police officer.
Yeah, he lost the police job because he's to uphold the law and to lose faith and lie to people. It was an offense to the oath he took to a police officer. So keep that in mind if you're an officer out there that actually can happen. You know,
that, I guess it was considered a fraud. So
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it was. You go out and check out all these crypto things. When you heard the news, how did you feel?
I'm always excited when I first hear the news like that. I'm always the person that I hope that all my goofy walking in the woods will be, you know, finally laid to rest, and I can finally say, ha, told you so, to some of the people that thought, you know, I'm being crazy. Obviously, I am crazy, but I was trying not to be that one part of my life. So I was hoping that would actually be true, and it seemed like it added up to being a lot of facts that worked well. It kind of followed the story of the frozen ice man from the early 70s that was being brought around to sideshows and stuff. And that had there's supposed to be multiple ones of those, like a duplicates made, but there was an original one that was thought to be true. So I was hoping, and but you know, the skeptic in me knew that. You know, as much as I wanted it, probably was going to be a hoax. So I couldn't let myself get totally excited because I figured it was going to be shot down right away. But for about a day and a half, I was kind of really excited to hope it actually pan out right. So
I myself kind of knew that it wasn't going to turn out. You know, but I wanted it to. Every part of me that kept saying that, you know, this is going to be a fraud, it's going to be a fake, there was that part of me inside that really, really wanted it to be true, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think, you've kind of evolved that sort of mentality in this field, which sounds horrible to say. You can't have blind faith in everything. You always approach everything in the hope it is true, but never put all the thing into it because it may not be, so.
You know, normally, too, we'd go into some of the weird locations of the week right now, but I actually was on the email recently with some friends of mine from Weird US, Joanne Austin. She's been on the show, and they're working on a new Weird Hauntings book that will be called Weird Encounters. I am looking forward to it coming out because I submitted work for it, and I'm hoping I'll be in it, but apparently now it's not going to come around until next September. So
wait for good things. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, it'll be even that much more awesome when it comes out in September.
You know, it's one of those crazy things. I've done a lot of work with a lot of authors recently, and every time I do something, they say, "Oh, you know, we're looking forward to it's coming out in July." And I'll talk to them in June and say, "I'm really looking forward to it," and they'll say, "Oh, you know, now it's coming out in December." And it's tough. If those of you who are out there working on getting published or something like that. This is a tough business, I can tell you. It's
there's so many contingencies and things to leap through that it's amazing that things get done at all. I was in parts of a couple different events that it's, you know, it's amazing that you're all hanging on one person to say go ahead for this one part, and it takes them 2 weeks, which pushes back everyone's scenario a whole month in some cases. It's like a domino effect, and It's odd, shocking that how sometimes it's a single person's whim that can make and break an event, you know, or some sort of item like a book. I've seen so many books that have been written, ready to go, art's even figured out, but somewhere along, editor or a senior publisher decides the book may not be what they want or may not have a good readership, and they pull plug. And it's one man's whim. So
Hey, we've got somebody raising their hand in the phone room. Let's take a look at this. Now, who could this be on the phone right now?
Am I on?
Oh, my God. Hang up fast. I think it's a prank call.
It's a trans call. It's a trans phoner.
A trainee
What's
call?
What's going on, guys? This is the ghost man, Sean B.
Welcome
hey,
back.
Hey, Sean.
I heard you guys were talking about Bigfoot. I found him in my pants, in my closet, actually. He was in my sweater drawer.
Now I know it's all a hoax because nothing big has ever been found in Sean's pants.
What are you doing, Johnny? What's going on, Magnus?
Oh, not too much. I'm a homeowner, and I hear you are as well, so congratulations.
I am. I'm in this big new house for all the listeners out there, and I was hoping for a ghost. I don't know if I've seen him yet. I got the studio set up in the back. I just can't get Bright House Network to somehow get me a cable connection going that's any good. So I had to call in on my cell phone tonight.
And, Sean, I'm really surprised you called in so early. I wasn't ready for it. I haven't even logged in the comments of Sean Burris, do not represent those of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, into the sound system this evening.
We're screwed.
I got free reign right now. Free reign. I can say all kinds of stuff. I had a joke of the day. I had a good joke of the day, and I forgot what it was. But you guys were talking about you guys are publishers, right? Or you're working on books, right?
Both everybody is. Everybody is, bro.
Yeah. The world
yeah, well,
now.
I was going to read a story, but I think I'm going to save it for next week. Heck, we're going to be off a couple weeks, aren't we?
Well, we're going to be coming to everybody from the Mid-South Paranormal Conference. We're going to be playing some of the interviews that we find at Mid-South next week. And then we're going to be off the week after that to do Haunted Hickory. And then we'll be back full force again. Right after that?
Provided Sean's comments don't get you kicked off.
That's right. In case Omnisound decides there's a problem there.
But anyway, Mag, I had to ask you, and I know my brother Nathan just asked you, how did you feel about that Bigfoot hoax, man? I was all gung-ho about it. I thought they found the big furry guy out in the woods, and I thought everything was cool, and then they blast us with something like that. And the second question for you is, do you think it could have been a hoax? I mean, not a hoax on the people's side, but a hoax like with the Internal Revenue Service. No, I'm kidding. The Federal Bureau of Investigations, whatever. They might have came in and covered it up, man. Some X-Files stuff, you know?
I was actually on a board talking about that second point, about if it was a cover-up. And I think that I doubt there'd be a reason why it'd be such a big cover-up. I mean, unless there's something I'm missing in the grand scenario, that Bigfoot is somehow the missing link that will bring down the Catholic Church, I doubt there'd be a big cover-up. And there's so many factoids that a lot more personal, just the guys lying themselves really seem like it was their own fault. And I don't think the government's that good at covering up to make it look so inept on everyone else's part. Usually they're so grandiose that it's so obvious they're trying to cover something up, I think.
Well, you know, maybe it could be something along the lines of, you know, how there's that rumor out there that Hillary Clinton is actually related to Aleister Crowley. Maybe there's like a secret out there that Bigfoot is actually like in the family tree of President Bush. So
well, that's going to be related to Bigfoot.
I was all excited for that, and then it kind of fell through. But I'm anytime any big account, any big crypto gets found or discovered, if it's on land, it's like mostly going to be a hoax. If it's in the water, a lot of the big sea monsters are being discovered, and then science is backing them. The cryptos in the world of the trees and out in your backyard are still not really followed by science so much, because people think they're just, you know, myths and things, versus science believes that a lot of the giant monsters of the sea are still real. But
what do you think about sex fairies? Sex fairies in the woods. I think they're real.
Sex fairies in the woods?
Sean goes out looking for them every night.
If they're
wearing like old hobo clothes and call themselves sex fairies, they may not be sex fairies, so you know.
Stop us.
That's how I met you, if you remember right.
I remember you approached me. I had the matching lipstick, got the conversation going that way. And confident, yeah. It was a mutual
sort of.
Yeah,
leather boots too.
That's all I had on, really. That's the thing.
Oh no, it got me hooked. You know, I think what happened was, I think these boys went out camping, and they were sexually molested by Bigfoot, and they didn't know how to come out into the public with this information, so they just said they caught a wax dummy.
So you're saying it's Brokeback Bigfoot? You're saying?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. I think it was I think it was a Bigfoot, and he got a little fill with the guys, and he ran off, and they had to make up some story.
Ah, that could be. That actually, in the world of news today, that actually makes more sense than things I'm reading anyway.
Oh, so, mm-hmm. Sean.
So actually, there's some other stuff.
Wait.
Did either of you guys make it down to Mothman?
Just
Festival?
To cover this up for a second, hold on.
The sure. comments of Sean Burrs do not represent those of Ghostman and Demon Hunter or their affiliates.
There we go. Now we're completely covered.
There we go. We're covered. Sean should have a tattoo of that, like on like his stomach area, and he picks his shirt up and flashes it and puts it down whenever he starts talking. It'll save so much time.
You know what? Hey, John, Magnus, you know what tattoos I got on my belly. Come on.
Yeah, I remember seeing him very close, being back and forth in front of my face.
Oh, Magnus, don't make me go out there and make a clip for you, too. No,
oh.
but to go back to Magnus's question before, no, I did not make it down to the Mothman conference this week. I know Ghostly Talk was down there at the Mothman conference.
I made it a couple years back. I didn't make it this year. I was hoping to do it this year, though. But I didn't.
You guys, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure that the listeners were getting the enjoyment of my voice.
Sadly, Sean, we can hear everything you say.
You guys are doing an outstanding job. Magnus, thank you so much. Of course, Magnus is back this up 100%. He's the show. We love you, Mag. And I'm going to let you guys go. I know the show's in good hands. So good night, everybody. I love all our listeners, and we'll be back real soon.
Night, bro. Right. We're going to miss you.
See you, Sean. Call me. Right. Seriously, man. We
got to
hang out.
You guys got some good guests on. Try not to embarrass us tonight, huh?
Coming from Sean, that's shocking. Wow.
I know, right? All right, guys, have a good night.
Take care, bro.
All right, bye-bye.
He's a good guy. I like Sean. He's so genuine. And if anyone's ever, like, have not met Sean in person, I suggest you go someplace where he's going to be and meet him. You guys, you two are one of the coolest people you'll ever meet together. Because you're genuine. The person you're talking to on the radio now is you. There's, like, no ulterior motives. Like, Sean doesn't care at all. He enjoys life. He enjoys people. If you're a person who have ulterior motives and are sneaky about it, Sean will call you out on it. But you guys are just great. I got to urge any listener, if you're going to be any of these shows coming up, the conferences or expos or anything else you guys are attending, listeners, go check out the Ghostman Demon Hunter because they are cool cats.
Oh, now, see, I'm glad it's radio. You're making me blush.
Oh, goodness. So, actually, if anyone, I love to hear how the Mothman thing went. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing every year. Nothing really overly changes. Mothman hasn't made an appearance in quite a while. But I'm also telling people now, when they're going down to Mothman, to also check out the Flatwoods Monster, which is also West Virginia. Do you ever hear about that story?
I have not heard.
Ah, well, we'll do something really quick, actually. I'll recant a tale. West Virginia, I think it was 1962, I think it was. There also was another odd occurrence happened. Much like people were seeing Mothman over at Point Pleasant, there was a just happened in one single night. They had a giant red orb was seen coming down into the woods. Large flashing red object came down. It didn't crash. There wasn't an explosion. Just landed. So a group, I think it was like teenagers and such, went into the woods and encountered what they described as a 10-foot tall. Originally, if you go online, look at the drawings show like a creature, but it's supposed to be 10-foot tall, and the head is like the shape of an ace of spades. Like picture a very pointed top, and it goes down that shape. They were walking through the woods.
A few mornings that I wake up with my hair kind of messed up from sleeping, and I kind of had that look about me.
Oh, I gotcha. See, I was going to make something about Mary reference there, but I thought against it. See, I'm growing up. I'm learning.
Not on this show, you won't. You won't learn anything on this show. We're against learning.
No more learning. Heck with that. But the Flatwood Monster, it was I think it was also like called the Braxton County Monster. Maybe people will know that better. The people walking over the woods, walking over the hill around this large oak tree, came this huge, they call it a monster. It was what they had said, it ducked under this tree branch. Later on, they went back and found the tree branch that it ducked under was 12 foot tall. And they said it was hovering above the ground by about 2 feet. It was, the original people who described it actually said it was metallic, very much like more of a machine than a monster. But, of course, the way media spins things and way stories keep told, they turn into a 10 foot tall monster, you know, kidnapping women. But the Flatwood Monster was actually, they had more like metallic claws in front of it, was emitting steam and gave off an oily substance that people who got near it got sick from it. One guy had nauseous, had inflamed sinus cavities, stuff like that. It's actually located like right dead center of West Virginia. They went back, checked it out, and they actually found the oily substance. I think it happened 1952. If I 62 I was wrong, 52, because it had the 50th year anniversary in 2002. The tree is still there. If you go see the tree that was set on, they said they saw it. The tree has since died, but it's all dead husk of an oak tree. But if you guys going to West Virginia next year for the Mothman Festival, I also urge people to go through there. And it's probably, the town is Flatwoods, and that's probably, since it's Braxton County Monster, probably Braxton County, West Virginia. So it's another West Virginian monster, West Virginia monster that you should definitely check out in your Mothman travels. So
again, another Mothman monster, West Virginia monster. Why do why do the monsters go there? It's like Japan. Japan always gets hit with the big monsters.
Monsters. See, I don't know why I would mind West Virginia, because everyone's armed down there. I was down there, everyone's armed. Even like the toddlers. They have like babies first Derringer down there. And it's scary. But it is a removed part of the world. It's got a lot of hills and trees and it's just, there's a lot of cryptids down there and some extraterrestrial stuff. That's the reason it's very weird, because the West Virginia monsters and cryptids have a very much a crossover between UFOs, and not just typical, like, you don't see a lot of Bigfoot down there. You'll have like cyborg Bigfoot or something that's so not science, you know, not like typical mountain woods thing. This is like, you know, hybridized monsters. So,
well, that's where they take the hybrid monsters to test them out.
West Virginia's the place to go.
They're like, they won't know what hit them down there.
Exactly. Shiny.
Well, you know, Magnus, we got to take a quick break. We're going to listen to another Dead Letters from Chrissy P. And when we come back, we will have Inside the Horror with our very own Gigi Gore Girl. We'll be right back.
It's coming. The 7th Annual Mid-South Paranormal Convention will be taking over Louisville, Kentucky, September 26th through 28th. The Louisville Ghost Hunters Society has went all out this year to bring some of the most amazing speakers, vendors, and activities together under one roof at the Executive Inn in the heart of Louisville. For ticket prices, hotel accommodations, and any other info on the 7th Annual Mid-South Paranormal Convention, visit LouisvilleGHS.com.
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore.
Welcome to Dead Letters. I'm Chrissy P., short fiction writer and avid reader, and here are my picks for paranormal reading this month. It's September, and the weather's changing. In many parts of the world, the air is turning snappish, and some of us, although we love autumn, are already dreading the isolation that can accompany the silent snow in winter. Because isolation, in fact, can make us sometimes see things that aren't there, it should be no surprise that some of the greatest ghost stories are set in the dead of winter. and Gene Mackin's novel The Sweet By and By, a well-researched fictional account about the rise of the famous Fox sisters and the spiritualist movement told in tandem with the story of a writer named Helen who was haunted by her past, is no exception. The story opens in the middle of winter in upstate New York, in Helen's, quote, rambling, drafty, turreted, many-chimneyed farmhouse situated at the top of an old Indian trail-turned road, end quote. Helen is troubled by what was left unresolved between her and her dead lover, and, perhaps as a way of isolating herself even further, accepts an assignment to write an article about the Fox sisters, only to find it was a brutal Hydesville, New York winter, season, quote, when the earth sleeps under winter's lingering white shroud and life holds its breath, unquote, that sparked the Fox sisters' rapping escapades. As the winter drags on and Helen becomes more obsessed with the Fox sisters' history, she's convinced Maggie Fox herself is communicating with her through a series of rappings and that the ghost of her dead lover is cooking in her kitchen. Perhaps, though, it is simply the winter itself and the changes it brings about in Helen's rapidly deteriorating mansion, bursting pipes, animals in the walls looking for respite from the cold, chimney fires, that is the real specter. So, as we smell those first dying leaves in the air, let us look ahead to the silent snows and think about what loneliness and isolation can do to a person. Mackin's novel inspires us to remember that when you think you're not alone, you actually just might be. And that is probably infinitely scarier. As always, I'll post this commentary and a link to where you can purchase The Sweet By and By in the Dead Letter section on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter forums. Until next time, here's to sleeping with the lights on.
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore.
Hickory, North Carolina is alive with talk about the dead. www.hauntedhickory.com is celebrating the paranormal October 3rd and 4th with classes and lectures by Patrick Burns of Haunting Evidence on True TV, Keith Age from Sci-Fi Channel Spooked and Children of the Grave, Tim and Trish Yancey plus Jason Gowan from Encounters Paranormal Radio, Nathan Schoonover of The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show, Stephen LaChance from Discovery Channel's A Haunting, and Shannon Sylvia of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International. Plus, vendors, a hearse contest, and much more. Participate in a live ghost hunt in the haunted west wing of the Hickory Salt Block. Haunted Hickory in Hickory, North Carolina, October 3rd and 4th. www.hauntedhickory.com. Make plans to attend. Now.
This is Robbie Thomas, and you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. Stay tuned, because they rock.
Magnus, buddy.
Yes, yes, yes.
You've been running around with the puppy there? I've been hearing a lot of noise in the background.
Yeah, the dog was going nuts. I had to give it some attention. So I'm sorry about that. I went to the microphone down. I thought it did. So probably my new mixing board is not working.
Well, that's okay because we're just in time for that most important question of the evening.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Yo!
What's up, guys?
Welcome back, Gigi.
Woohoo!
I'm just kicking back, getting ready for that Gigi kind of information. Smoking tonight, cigar of the evening. I am smoking a fine Ashton Senorita from Butthead's Tobacco Emporium in Danbury, Connecticut. Woohoo!
Yay!
And light that up right now. Oh, I feel much better now. So tell me, Gigi, how are you?
I am awesome, guys. I can't wait till next week, man. Mid-South.
Now, you know, Sean and I won't be around for some of it. So,
for some of it?
We're going to be running around doing some projects. So,
A.K.A. in jail.
Yeah, that's probably
yes.
It.
Yes, yes, the skinny dipping thing, yes.
Oh, I didn't go that route.
We've wound up in jail for that before, so what can I say?
Yeah, you know, once, twice, three times, whatever. You know.
A lady, we know how they are.
Oh my God! So what's going on? I mean, do we have international listeners this week? Because I'm like reeling. We didn't have any last week. You know, we didn't have the show. And
well, you know, it's funny you should ask, because I was looking up the international listeners and had a problem with the system getting to them. However, I did find out that our friends in Sherwood Forest are still listening, that we still have friends in that unknown place in Australia that I just don't have a name for it yet. And no, Manila. Sorry. They weren't listening in Manila. I was hoping, but, you know, our friends in Japan, still there. We still have our Japanese friends. They may be plotting against us. I don't know, because, you know, we just made the whole giant monsters in Japan joke. But, you know, it's...
stupid Americans!
What can you do? I mean, it's not our fault that Godzilla always goes to Tokyo first. It's
the smallest island meets the biggest monster. That's the equation.
Well, you know, I think it has something to do with World War II and how after World War II they took all of Japan's armies away, so the monsters figured free reign. Woo!
And I thought that's the reason why they have bad porn.
Hey, their porn's pretty good.
Sean's visiting right now. Anyway.
He's speaking us to us mentally and making us say these things.
I know.
Oh, yeah. He's there in spirit, right? There's no sort of mental flaws to get that out either.
So it's sort of like Sean beyond the grave. I don't know.
It's kind of scary, huh?
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
So what have you been doing with your time off, GG?
Oh, my God. Insanity? I'm sore right now. Don't ask why. It's a long story. I promise it's not as sordid as like a Sean story would have been, but, you know, in his honor, we'll just leave it at that and pretend he said something perverted. No, I have been busy, guys. Just running around, you know, getting ready for the show, handling the Gore Girl Variety Hour. We're getting ready to do another show during the week for horrormoviefans.com. It's nuts, guys. We're going crazy. So, yeah, I know. I basically have no life now. It's exciting.
Used to be all you had to do is watch a movie each week and come in and tell us. And no, you couldn't be happy with that. You had to go out and fill your time. I warned you, Gigi. I warned you. I said doing a show is a part-time job. And some weeks it's a full-time job.
I agree with you. I sat there. I think it was the other day when I was in like hour 15 of like, I was like, which show am I on now? What am I doing? So hour 15, when my brain was scrambled, I went, oh, God. I know how Nathan feels. I was like, I'm sorry, Nathan.
Nathan feels soft and silky because he uses vitamin E lotion.
Is that the secret?
That's the secret. Victoria won't tell you, but I will.
I know. I have to go get some now. I don't know.
I put the lotion in the basket.
It puts the lotion on its skin.
I want to get the hose again.
How you doing, Magnus?
Not too bad. I'm just having fun listening to you talk. I listen to you guys on the radio show, so it's always funny when I guest host because I get my brain thinking I'm just listening to the show again, and then I realize, wait, I'm part of this one. I can talk and they'll hear me. So it's kind of funny. So I'm listening to you talk, I also realize that I'm actually with you at the microphone, not listening to the Variety Hour or the Ghost and Demon Hunter. So, but I'm doing well. You may have heard me goofing around in the background with the dog. I'm sorry if I interrupted anyone there before. But other than that, I'm doing great. I was going to quest to talk to you the other day because I'm searching for I want to make the best horror flick movie library in my new home, and I want your opinion on it. So, and of course, I want the bad B movies as well. I want the best bad B movies to entertain myself, as well as the best horror flicks ever created. So.
Oh yes, I will email you my personal inventory, so you can be like, oh crap.
No wonder she has no life. Good Lord, this is a lot of movies.
I have a lot of horror movies, and I've got some sick stuff. Some crazy stuff. Oh, my God. I don't know. I think there's something wrong with me. I don't know.
That's what everyone tells me.
What are some of the best bad
it.
Movies you have in your collection, GG?
Believe it.
Yeah. What would be the best B-movie you've ever seen in your life? Like sort of genre. You know what I mean? Not the best, but one the most memorable right now.
That's so hard because that's like my favorite category is B movies.
I know. That's same here. I'm fanatic.
And I mean, you can like stretch that because now you're talking like What are you talking? B-movies from a certain decade or B-movies
B-movies from, let's say, late 70s, early 80s. I'm going to go monster variety, but I'm going to throw in a catch here. Not giant monsters, but small, you know, not like mid-range. Like you're talking about Bigfoot sort of size, but not Godzilla size.
Bigfoot sort of size, but not Godzilla sort of size.
Yeah.
Well, that's been the whole topic this evening, don't you know? I was also thinking nobody ever talks about as a horror because it's such a comedy. Dr. Frankenfooter, and you know the whole Rocky Horror Picture. It's got horror right in the name.
Let's do the time warp again.
I'm sorry, but. Oh my God, the midnight showings of that are amazing. Like, if you go and you dress, you have to dress up. I know people that go and they don't dress up, but I'm like, seriously? You're like missing out. It's like too much fun.
You want to see me in that leather attire? I tell you, me in fishnets, to die for. Or to gouge your eyes out. One of those two will happen. I don't know which one's going to happen first.
I got in trouble the last time for bringing a water pistol with me.
Ooh. That's not a water pistol. That was your penis. Remember, you can't think about parties.
I take that with me everywhere I go.
I actually want a picture of you, Magnus, in the leather thing, because I'm going to hang that above my bed. I want a glossy poster of that, and I want you to sign it. I'm going to hang it above my bed.
Well, next time you see Nathan, he's got two of them. He has one on both sides of his bed, so when he gets to the morning, he can see me. I actually made two for him, one of me smiling and one of me frowning. So if he's in a good mood, hops out one side, it's me smiling my leather attire. And besides me frowning with less leather attire.
What Magnus isn't telling you is I took those pictures, and I'm very proud of them, and that's why they're hanging on the wall.
He was hanging up and down from my window, a second story of house. I don't know how he was doing so well. He had a miner's helmet on, rope, a camera. It was amazing.
Nathan's
I'm just good at what
like
I do.
That. He's tricky like that.
He is.
That's why we don't sleep with them when we go to conventions, because stuff happens. We see the miner's helmet, we go, oh, God, I'm getting my own room.
I can't go
through another night of this.
I wake up not knowing what's going on. My left leg feels weird for some reason. My left eye won't open.
Missing.
Not again. And my wallet this time. God.
Charlie. We're going to Candy Mountain,
Charlie. Charlie.
They took my freaking kidney again.
So we're having a lot of fun here. What's up with... what would be your movie to get back that thing? What would be your... Pick one movie that people have to see. How's that?
Your worst movie of your best of your worst movies from your collection.
Yeah.
My best of my worst movies. I don't know. There was some crazy stuff because you're talking about like monsters, right? You want monster flicks, like beast kind of stuff, like yetis and stuff. There's crazy stuff out there like Snow Beast. Do you remember that crappy thing from like the late 70s where they're like in the ski lodge and... you know, it's all these rich mamby-pamby people, and this, like, yeti-looking snow beast thing goes running around killing people, and they're like, we must kill it!
That has actually been re-released last year on a special 6 or 8 disc monster set you can get from Barnes & Nobles or Borders. One of those two have the Bad B-movie section now. Midnight? There's a whole movie listing that's doing it.
There are so many. God, I can't remember the company that does it, but they release actual like little box sets, and they have everything from the 50 greatest driving classics, the 50 worst, you know, D movies. They've got like, you know, popcorn favorites. They've got like horror films, sci-fi. They've got like, you know, your 50 worst slasher flicks. Like, it's insane. They've got these little... And then, of course, there's some crappy company that comes out with... It's like... I think it's like 2 discs or something. They have these little box sets. It's like 2 discs, and it's like maybe... I don't know. There's a couple of movies on them, whatever. But they're always the really crappy independent films that some schmuck bought thinking he could make money. So they put them on there, and it's like somebody made in like their backyard like 10 years ago, and you're like, what? What is this?
Yeah, it's a like, monster it's with garbage bags on it. Oh, no.
It's about a ghost. I'm like, where? There's no ghost in the movie. What are you talking about?
You see the guy with the mustache with bad outfit? He's actually a ghost. You can tell by the bad makeup job. We're just attacked by a powder duster.
It's a ghost, and we're not going to admit the movie has a ghost.
You know, Gigi, I have discovered that I'm very lucky being a Comcast customer in that, well, not so much. I wasn't that lucky this evening when I couldn't get internet signal and there was almost no show again. But I was very lucky in the fact finding out that we actually have a channel called Fearnet.com.
Fearnet.
And I went on there, and so many of the movies Gigi has told me about just came right up. Except Black Sheep. It wasn't on there. I wanted to see Black Sheep, but...
Oh, you haven't seen that yet? You have to see that movie.
I don't... like, all last year. Come on, Nate. Come on. Seriously.
We talked about that last time on this episode of the show, didn't we, Black Sheep?
I think we did.
Zombie Sheep.
Yes. Okay, you actually brought this up. You had Rob Zombie, or Rob Zombie. Woo! Robbie Thomas. You had a little clip from him, like, right before I came on. I started cracking up, because you remember that whole joke we had when Robbie Thomas was on last time, Nate?
Oh, yes, that, he was entering your room using his psychic powers at night.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, Zombie Sheep flashed in my head when I heard him. I started cackling. I was, like, trying not to, like, you couldn't hear me. I was like, oh, God, Zombie Sheep. We love you, Robbie Thomas. Oh, God.
That was bad.
I still can't sleep at night because I see his face. So, you know. I'm in therapy right now, but that's all right.
You know, before we get to the movie, Gigi, because... we will talk about a movie tonight in the last 10 minutes that we have here. But
what are you talking about?
I've been listening to the Gore Girl Variety Hour, and I can't help but notice that every week that you do the Gore Girl Variety Hour, you say, "Well, that's it. Nathan's going to fire me."
End of the week. Like, goodbye. Oh, yeah.
He's firing me from a different show.
So
that's
what?
Like my running thing. Seriously.
So what do we have for a movie this week, Gigi?
Well, first, am I fired or am I still on?
We'll let you. We'll see at the end of the segment.
After you tell about the movie, we'll let you know. Because we're going to make your full day's work out of work.
It's like the Olympics. You guys are going to hold up cards. 5.6. Woo!
I'll give you 9.2, baby. 9.2 for me.
That's right. That's right.
If you had a webcam version of it, I'd be all 10 because you're that hot.
See, because I'm in the towel, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the towel is optional. That's what I'm saying.
Sometimes it's just a washcloth and a smile.
Yeah, a washcloth. It's a washcloth with tape. It's great.
Exactly. Duct tape's amazing. It's very futuristic. So, movie, right? The movie here?
I do movies. Yeah. We don't like movies. What are you talking about?
We don't need no stinking movies.
I'm going around, right? And I was like, you know, I've been reviewing a lot of bad films, a lot of films that didn't really get me, things like that, you know, and I hate going a long streak of me going, God, this is horrible. So I'm like, I'm going to try to find something, and I'm not going to review something unless I decently and genuinely like it. So I rented this one movie, right? And I had heard about it coming out a while back because it had Luke Diamond Phillips in it. And for some reason, like, I don't know what it is with Lou Diamond Phillips. Like, he takes a crap and everybody takes note. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know that he was still that relevant. Okay. But
I just remember him doing the television series Wolf Lake.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember that.
And I just remember the advertisement where they're saying, there's something different about Wolf Lake. Well, maybe it's all the wolves. And every time a wolf appears, a person disappears. There's something weird there, yeah. But
there's something strange in Wolf Lake. It's Lou Diamond Phillips. I don't know.
Yeah, it was him, huh?
That's the whole story right there. But, it was... So I had heard about this, but I never watched it because, you know, me and indie films, I'm like, oh, God, you know, because it's usually the same recycled crap over and over again. So I actually watched this one, and I have to say, guys, wow. I was actually genuinely surprised. So we're not going to have a horrendous review.
I'll believe it when I hear it.
It came out in 2006. It was directed by Harry Basil, who I don't know if you guys remember, but he was big with Rodney Dangerfield. Did like he was associate producer on Ladybugs. He did something with one of Dangerfield's like comedy things that he had coming out. He was also in Funny Money with Chevy Chase. He did like a bit acting role. And
Wait, what was the name of the movie again? You broke up a little bit because I think I was talking myself, but I didn't even hear the name of the movie.
Fingerprints.
Okay. Fingerprints.
Yes, I'm very careful not to leave any of those around, but go on.
fingerprints. And I actually had this for Sean, but I hope he's somewhere wherever he is and fix this up.
I'm sure wherever he is, he's somewhere.
Telepathy. I hope he gets this telepathy. But the guy actually did a bit role in the Chevy Chase movie Funny Money, and he actually has the credit of retarded party guest. So that was for
Wow.
Sean. Yeah, that one was for Sean. Somehow I would have got a horn for that or something.
The fart machine.
Yeah, I don't know, something like that. But it was written by the Cleveland Brothers, which I was kind of like, eh, all right. And I was kind of like, I don't know about this. But wow, the cast was actually surprising. I have to say that the number one thing you cannot find in indie films is decent acting. They're always One Life to Live or Lifetime, or they're all trying to be, you know, the next best thing to The View and Golden Girls and all that. They're trying to be the next best over 40 crowd pleasers. But this had some surprisingly interesting people in it. I mean, besides Lou Diamond Phillips, who, of course, the sun sets on, I suppose.
Only in his pants.
I don't know. I didn't know he was as huge as... Okay, I like him. Whatever.
Just I want to know how Gigi knows that Lou Diamond Phillips is huge. But
there's a reason I wear a towel, guys.
That is lewd. That should be a calling card. Your business card. There's a reason why I wear this towel. Keep semicolon. You know, Diamond Phillips.
Fill in the blanks yourself. I'm in room. No, okay. It has Leah Peipsich, who actually was the lead actress in this. And all I can say is, wow, she was awesome. You know, it had that one chick from, like, what is it, The Hills or one of those MTV crap in it, Kristen Cavallari. It had Andrew Lawrence in it. Not Matthew. Andrew Lawrence, the youngest one. He's like 20-something now. I had no idea. And then, of course, Sally Kirkland, who always does a great job. But basically the plot, and this is what kind of tripped me out, because you don't know this from reading the box or, you know, you don't know this from just random people talking about this. No one ever explains fully what the story is about. But actually, this girl gets out of rehab, and she moves in with her parents and her older sister. So they end up moving to a small town for their dad's job. He gets a new gig or whatever. And she ends up moving back with them, and oh, blah, 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 drama. She's out of rehab. Oh, my God, so horrible. Which I don't know, but when I was in high school, if you went to rehab, it wasn't a big deal. I don't know.
In How was rehab, Gigi?
Go to school. Wow.
I'm like, I'm from Chicago, right? Everyone's been to rehab.
Baby's first meth pill, lab, nice.
So, you know, all this drama happens because she was, you know, they try to make this a big plot point, but it really wasn't. So not only does she have to struggle with her addictions and not falling off the wagon, but she has to deal with the town's sort of creepy past and the fact that it's crippled with fear. The cool thing about this movie is that it's based on the legend. Everybody's heard this. Everybody knows a town that this happened in. It's based on the legend of, remember, the kids in the bus, they get hit. If you park your car over the train tracks, put it in neutral, the children will push you across, and you can see their fingerprints on the back of your car.
Yes.
I remember this movie now. It's all coming back to me.
It's all coming back.
Oh, my God.
Well, everybody knows the story. This is, you know, one of those stories like the escaped mental patient that, you know, hunts the teenagers in the woods, you know, and kills the boyfriend and hangs them above the car. I mean, this is like all those stories. We all know somebody that knew somebody that, you know, this town, this happened in. This actually did happen. I'm not sure about the fingerprints part, but a bus full of kids was actually hit a long, long time ago, and that's part of why the buses actually have to stop and open the doors before the whole train tracks thing. So, I mean, this actually, there was an accident like that, but, I mean, as far as the rest of it, you know how ghost tales end up working out. But every kid, what teenager in America hasn't tried to do this? You know, you hear about this, you know a spot where this happens in. So you go with your friends and you put your car in neutral and you're like, yeah, there's going to be some ghosts that could push me across the tracks. It's going to be cool. You know, how everybody is. So that's what hooked me in, because I love stories like that. I love where they take something that's actually, you know, some urban legend or something that we accept into our society, our culture today, and they spin something off of it. Nothing crazy like, oh, yes, we're going to take the story, but then we're going to, like, throw, like, six axe murders in and then aliens. No.
And the
okay,
children just, are zombies. Yeah.
Exactly. And black sheep. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. But, you know, they told the story, and this is what I liked about it. They told the story. They gave you this simple thing, and all they did was go, okay, what if it really happens? Okay, cool. Well, that's it. The kids don't do anything other in the movie than, you know, they're not running around killing people. They're not running around, you know, being crazed, you know, alien-like ghosts or whatever. No, they just, every once in a while, they push it over, and they weave a story through the town's history of when this happened and, you know, why it happened. And, of course, you know, it gets a little crazy. There's a crazy, you know, guy that used to own the train station, and he went psycho. And, you know, so there's, like, a whole lot of crazy stuff they weave in it. But it was very cool, the basis of it. And I'll tell you something, that Leah Pipes, the main actress, awesome. I've never seen anybody in an indie film that actually impressed me with acting. She's very good, very natural, which is surprising because, like I said, they're always going up for a Lifetime Award or something. It was just, it was wow to see her. I mean, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, who are you and why have I not heard of you before? So, very cool. And she keeps you on the right path watching this movie. The ghosts, I wasn't upset. I wasn't like, oh my God, this is going to be CGI hell. I'm going to be horrified. No, this was actually very well shot. They stayed within their budget. They said, hey, we're going to work with what we got. They didn't try to give you something that you couldn't possibly believe or couldn't possibly stomach. So there you go. You got that. The cool little twist that I like from being a huge fan of serial killers and especially Jack the Ripper is that they have this crazy, and I think what set this off for me is it just came out of nowhere. They have this crazy conductor person that, like, you don't see their face. They have, like, a black mask thing over it. And, like, they're just in random places at random times. And it's like Jack the Ripper. Like, he just randomly walks through random things. I mean, it's creepy. And I'm not actually a person to get creeped out by things. But it was actually genuinely creepy. Because I'm like, what if, where did this come in the plot? How does this make sense? But you didn't care. Because for some reason, you accepted it and it fit. You were like, wow, this is kind of cool. This, you know, I mean, you do figure it out. I mean, if you're a smart movie watcher, you figure it out halfway through the movie who it is. Probably
Sean,
even the
right?
beginning. It is Sean. And he was in Japan when he did this. But
Gigi, you know, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap up in a minute.
I'm on it, man. I'm on it. So he just pretty much that's it. I mean, it's got some cool stuff. Andrew Lawrence, who everybody knows, is just the toddling little kid of the Lawrence brothers, is actually an a-hole in this movie, and that was awesome to see. That was a sight within itself. So you got this crazy Jack the Ripper person. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. I mean, that's weird. You don't understand it, but you like it. You got the story, which was kind of cool. Like I said, don't expect any explosions or epic, you know, filmmaking here. It was just a decent indie film, which was actually pretty decently acted. And it had some cool little points to it. So it interested me enough to make me not throw the movie across the room at the end like all the other indie films I watched.
So how out of 10 little fingers, how many disembodied fingerprints did it get?
Disembodied fingerprints. I'm going to give it like a 7.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it was interesting enough. And I'd have to say it's far above a lot of these indie crap that's coming out, so...
Alrighty, Gigi. Well, we're going to have to go and take a break so we can come back with our guest this evening, Dr. Taff, I believe that is his name. And,
yes, Barry Taff.
Dr. Barry Taff. So I guess we'll be hearing from you soon.
Yes, you will. I will actually see you next week.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I didn't know you were coming.
We're all going to Mid-South. It's going to be a giant thing.
Woo!
Call me when you guys are partying. I'll miss you guys. I wish I could go. I can't go.
Oh, I miss you, Max.
All right,
call
then. We'll see you next week then, Gigi.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Gigi. And folks, stick around because we'll be back in just a minute with our special guest, Dr. Barry Taff. And no music this week. We're going to go straight into our first guest of the week. Sorry, no bathroom break. Stick around.
What's your favorite scary movie? Welcome to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. Get your weekly download to all things ghostly and paranormal and then some. Test your knowledge of the paranormal with haunted trivia. Email your otherworldly experiences for Parashare and listen in to the rants and useless banter of Laura and Brian. If they've got an opinion on the paranormal,
or even a great pub,
they'll talk about it. The Deadline can be easily downloaded from the NJGHS.net website. You can also listen to archive shows at PodcastAlley.com. Say, while at Podcast Alley, cast a vote for The Deadline, because everyone knows that at some point in life, you have to meet The Deadline.
Para X Radio, and you.
This is Johnny. Johnny is going to use his computer to contact the spirits. His sister Jenny is very curious and watches. Johnny just typed in www.para-x.com and is now communicating with the dead. You go, Johnny. Jenny is excited because now she can listen to shows like Night Watch with Todd Sheets, Caps Paranormal Radio with David and Tom, Paranormal Awareness with Bill Metz, Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Leinster Paranormal Radio Show with Danny and Cormac, and the Ghost Divas Live. One day, the world will be a better place when we can all be like Johnny and Jenny and tune into Para X Radio at www.para-x.com. All paranormal, all the time.
Hey, this is Jim Snell, the Parafooter. And you listen to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
And we're back. You know, it's kind of weird when you don't do that musical break. I didn't get to run in and do any other business while I was in there. So, Magnus, we are joined in the third chair tonight by our new friend and rather very, very interesting background here, Dr. Barry Taff. Welcome, Dr. Barry Taff.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, why on earth did you agree to do our show? I mean, come on.
I was actually, I did it because of an event I'm participating in, October 24th, 25th in Las Vegas, called Paracon of Sin City or something like that. I'm one of the presenters.
Ooh. Nice.
So you, I was looking at your background here, UCLA, parapsychology lab. Now, to be honest with you, I didn't even know UCLA had a parapsychology department.
And thank God you expressed it in the past tense, had.
Oh, had.
The 60s into 1978, in which it was formally closed. Even in those early years, it was politically incorrect.
So do you think they'll get another one now that the paranormal seems to be more accepted?
No, actually, it's more politically incorrect now than it was in the 60s and 70s. If you can't make money with what you're doing or kill people, that has no value. Unfortunately,
mental note.
That's
mental note.
Academia looks at things these days.
So there's a hint, Mag. If we can't make money with the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, we have to find a way to kill people with it. I know
or control their behavior.
Oh. Well,
we can work this out. I think Dr. Tapier, he can maybe help us out to learn to control and or kill. So,
now, is that the kind of thing they actually wanted you to focus your studies on back when you were in school for this? Was mind control and things like that?
We never dealt with that end of it. Our end of it, the laboratory work, we did the earliest developmental work of what later became remote viewing, telepathy and precognition. We ran development groups and training procedures in the lab, and we got a lot of good results, and we learned a lot, and we've developed models based on what we learned. But the really interesting work was out in the field, investigating cases of hauntings and, you know, ghosts and doppelgangers and apparitions and whatever comes between the two.
Now, I got involved in ghost hunting in the late 80s, and still at that time, it was even frowned upon. You didn't tell people what you were doing. What was it like in the 70s?
Well, actually, I started in the late 60s. It was even more difficult. You didn't share your information with other than your close friends or a colleague, because people looked at you like, right, sure, and they'd get away from you, and they'd laugh like, a person, you know, a couple of the oars aren't even in the water. But, you know, mm-hmm. I've always been there. The thing is, see, the parapsychology is the only science in the West that you don't need a degree to work with, because anyone can go out there and claim they're chasing ghosts or aliens or anything in between. And if you don't know how the physical world works and how it doesn't work, then how can you know how the paranormal works and doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. You know, when somebody asked me for my bio recently, I sent them a bio that said, Nathan Schoonover is not a demonologist. He's not a parapsychologist. He's not a priest, reverend, or monk. You know, I just listed all the things I was not, because I don't have degrees in this, and I don't think it's fair to the people who do to start calling myself those things.
Well, I mean, there isn't... I mean, I don't have a degree in parapsychology.
Well,
there was only two offered in the world, I believe, in terms of a doctoral degree.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, my work was in my harder science that had nothing to do with parapsychology. But that's been my stock and trade for the last 40 years, and I'm sure it's why when I applied for positions of, you know, based on my academic background, I was denied, because they knew all too well what I'd been doing. And even though it was published in referee journals over the course of time, they didn't want to be associated with people that did this work, because you make waves. And as you know, in academia, even today, they don't like people who make waves.
No, that's what you got to stick with the timeline. You got to stick with what's already known. You know, people that rock the boat get kicked out of the boat quickly. So
exactly.
I know that feeling. Now, it's weird. I swear I've seen your picture before. Did you do, were you like interviewed for TV shows back in like the late 80s and 90s for references?
I've been on hundreds of shows over the years.
Yeah, so I know I've seen you multiple times. Because I read your information, then I finally saw your photo actually on the website here. And I know I've seen you discuss many of things. And you've actually approached everything. The reason I enjoyed your work is you approach everything with a science mindset, like you said, understand the real world, and then, you know, move towards it with a logic understanding. So,
right. I mean, you know, there's an old phrase, it's called Occam's Razor. And mm-hmm. it was like Jodie Foster spoke of it well in the movie Contact, that, you know, all things being equal, you always go with the simplest explanation. So once we rule out what we know of and everything else, well, then what's left is up to science and researchers to determine. And unfortunately, a lot of the paranormal still fit that pattern.
Mm.
You know, I've always thought it funny that Occam's Razor has become so famous, and Occam, you know, you would think that William of Occam actually came up with that idea, and it wasn't his idea, it was just his favorite saying, so he got the credit for it, and find that a lot in stuff that we do. We come up with ideas, other people get the credit.
Yeah, so just say it how I know. So
things are so bad. I mean, can you believe they actually have terms? There's a term for people who have a compulsion, the pun, which I do, and the term is paranomasia.
I think I have that disability.
Yeah, so do I. There's also a term for people who are frightened of the number 13. That's called triskaidekaphobia.
I knew that one. That was a word of the day a couple weeks back, I think.
And I actually thought, people actually develop words for these things? Well, I guess they do.
Well, somebody gets paid to do that. Like you said, if
right,
you can make money at it, hey.
Right. Exactly. And, but, you know, it's like, what's intriguing is the broad range of people I've got to meet over the years, from the completely insane to the really focused, dependent individuals that are having incredible experiences, or you end up working with them because they're an asset to what you're doing, and it helps move you forward, and you help move them forward. But that's the most uncommon thing.
Now, you, Dr. Taft, your work led to the case The Entity.
Correct.
What like, differed from what we've seen about The Entity with your work?
Well, first of all, the book and the movie were based on the novel. No, it's a novel.
The
so
novel.
That was, you know, right. Greatly dramatized. The real case, in some ways, was less spectacular, in some ways more. Things that obviously we couldn't have done then, let alone today, to replicate her home environment in a controlled laboratory situation and then try to document the events the best we could. When Frank DiFelita was writing the book, he came to me and he said, "This is. I'm sure, show me the book he's doing. Okay, if you had your druthers and all the money you needed, what would you do?" And we were at UCLA. Well, this is what we would do. And a lot of what was in the book didn't make it to the screen because the director rewrote the script, like, what else is new? And he took out all the technology, the holographic laser cameras, the thermal imaging, which was an early use of it, other things as well. And it just, I didn't like the way the director rewrote Frank's really good script. But, hey, you know, once you sell it, it's over. I mean, you're out, you know, once Frank sold it, he had no control. He was supposed to direct it, actually, and it might have been a far more interesting take on the subject, but you can't change history. You can't do it.
Now, that's the way film works, you know.
Yeah.
Again, well, all your work, somebody else gets the credit.
What we should do is, for those who don't know the whole story, I wouldn't mind hearing just, you know, oops, what it was about, actually.
Right. Well, first of all, let me say that several months ago, I republished the article that I wrote in the 70s in a British paranormal research journal called PSI, Journal of Investigative Psychical Research. And you can go to that to their website, and you can find it. And now what's intriguing is the real case was in some ways far more spectacular than what the movie depicted. No, I'm getting really bad feedback on this line. I'm hearing my own voice coming back.
Let me see
really
if I can
loud.
Fix that, Dr. Taft.
Okay.
Yeah, so the reason I stopped talking is because I kept hearing myself, too. So.
Wow, that's better. Okay, that's good.
My mic is causing the feedback, so I'll just turn my mic down when I'm not talking.
Okay. Okay, what happened, my colleague at the time was in a bookstore in Westwood, as depicted in the movie, and he heard two women overheard him talking about our work, and, you know, and they stood up and she said, my house is haunted, and my colleague looked at her, okay, well, give me your name, give me your phone number, and we'll contact you and come out, and so it was just like any other case, you know, we went out, it was in Culver City, California, which is basically in the western area of Los Angeles, and it was August 22nd, 1974, on Braddock Street, and we go out there very hot, very muggy, very warm inside, no air conditioning, a beaten, broken down little shack of a house. There here is a woman named Doris Byther. She has four children. She had three boys and one girl. We never saw the girl. She was the youngest. She was a baby. We start talking to her, and the very first thing she says right off the top is she'd been repeatedly raped by the ghost. I went, oh God. I rolled my eyes back, and I thanked her for her time and said we could refer her to a psychiatrist at UCLA in the NPI where we worked if she wanted to, and she really she wasn't of interest. About a week later, she called back that neighbors of hers had witnessed something. Okay, it was close by. We'll go back again reluctantly, and, you know, hotter. We're standing in the kitchen. It's very warm. And when she's talking to us about things that have happened, the lower cupboard door flies open, and an iron skillet flies out across the kitchen. It's the floor. No springs, no wires, no people in the cupboard, in the cabinet. And that began a series of events that lasted several months. And it was escalated from that to began seeing balls of light, these lime green balls of light. These aren't the orbs that a lot of the digital photography depicts today. I'm not impressed with those. These things were the size of one or two human fists together, and they were always lime green, flying around the bedroom. And so, okay, well, we sealed the bedroom off from all external lighting sources. It was pitch black in there. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. There were about 20 people in there, about five photographers, professional photographers we brought with us. This is long before the word digital existed in anyone's name, you know, anyone's mind, I should say. And suddenly the lights started appearing. They're zipping around the room. They're flying around the room. And we got one photo of what we saw. It looked like a comet with a tail. The problem is we couldn't tell speed or direction because we had no reference. So as this thing kept occurring over and over, we put up black poster boards on her walls and her ceiling with that gray duct tape. And so every board had a number and a magnetic orientation, so we'd know where things were coming from and going to. Yeah, the lights showed up. most of which we couldn't photograph. We did capture some intriguing pictures, which we never saw, framing the subject of the haunting, Doris Byther. She's on the bed, and she's cowering almost in fear as these lights are flying around her. What we captured looks like it's an arc of light framing her. And what's really intriguing about this, if you look carefully at the picture, in the back, a little bit to the right of where Doris is sitting on the bed, two walls meet at a 90-degree angle, had this image been projected by some, you know, prosaic mechanism, it would have been bent in accordance with the walls. It was not. It was in free space. Mm-hmm. Now, we didn't see that. So, look, what we got, it looked like, was a time-lapse photograph. To try to take pictures of stars, you don't have a moving platform, you get streaks. This is the same thing. So it evolved from there, and one point, something tore the fuse box out of the wall and threw it at Doris, missed her, threw some candelabras at her, hit her in the arm. A few weeks later, we go back and get a call at midnight, and we go back there, and all the boards had been torn down. Plaster was torn down, as it was, of course, the paint. She could have done it, but just the way she was acting, it didn't, you know, she was too traumatized. So we put everything back up, and the phenomena kept occurring over time. We got some more photographs that were just as incredible as the ones before. And finally, one of the evenings, the green balls of light coalesced in the corner and took the shape of a large male apparition from about the waist up. It was real clear. Now, the best depiction of this, unfortunately, was not in the entity, but they showed looked like pathetic. I mean, just, I didn't like it. If you want to see what really happened, you can either rent the Entity DVD that's out in the special feature section. We show footage of what Barry Conrad and I did. Well, actually, it was Barry Conrad, but I was part of it. So it's called California's Most Haunted. You can buy this at different places, probably at worldoftheunknown.com, which is Barry's website. And you see a really accurate recreation of what we saw because the effects person we worked with, Rod Matsui, brilliant guy, very attentive to details. This is what we observed. Very muscular upper torso, head moving, very aware of us. It was it almost responded to our comment. And then it was a pop of light, and it was gone.
Now, when this occurred, you were in the room, you saw this happening?
Oh, yes. There were about 20 to 25, anywhere between 20 and 30 of us in that little superheated bedroom in late summer, 1974.
And you didn't feel threatened by this thing at all that appeared?
I did. No, I come from a background. I used to race cars professionally. Road race.
So and nothing scares you.
That doesn't scare the life out of you. Nothing will. No, I'm pretty.
See, just sitting alone in a dark room with the people I work with would have scared me. So
I'm more scared of people with guns and knives. For the most part, you have a better chance of being hit with a meteorite in the next 5 seconds than you do of being harmed with this stuff over 100 years. 99% of the time, it isn't harmful. Every so often, you get a case where people are claim to be harmed. Now, remember, Doris claimed she'd been repeatedly raped by 3 male entities. Two held her down. The biggest one raped her. We couldn't prove or disprove that, obviously, because that happened before we came into the case. But what was interesting is that the phenomenon moved with her. She finally got out of the house. She was able to move from Culver City to Carson, which is a little further south. That'd be about 8 or 9 miles south, 10 miles south of Culver City. Not the best area. Kind of dangerous region. And she moved into a small little house, better than the last one she was in for sure, and within a matter of days, phenomena started up again. Things flying around, breaking sounds, the rape, pretty much, stuff was over. We were at her house, and suddenly a vase flies right across the room, right in the middle of us, and breaks on the floor. Now, she moved in, the media knew nothing of her. This is before there was media like there is today. There was no internet, they only had broadcast channels. And within days, her neighbors, who knew nothing about her, began having poltergeist events going on around them. Objects being thrown on the floor, the dishes on the floor, garbage being dumped out. But only after she moved in. So it's like a proximity effect. And then finally she moved from there to San Bernardino. It followed her there. And then she moved there to Texas. It followed her there. We lost track of her at that point. Frank DeFilita went out and kept more in touch with her than we were. And the last time I even spoke to her was when the film came out in 1983. It's amazing. The case was extraordinary. Now, you know, we've been back to that house, not inside, asking the residents if having experiences. And no, they didn't say anything.
Now, do you find that with cases that people who move into these homes don't want to talk about the past? Do you...
If they're bright, they may not want to because they could lose their job.
Yeah, well.
You know, it's bad enough that women are raped by men. And then you tell someone you've been raped by a ghost. So then not only do they see that you're traumatized, but you're traumatized and you're insane. So again, you have to draw a line at what point you want to keep communicating.
I think some of our people in our chat room got bumped out of the chat room, and they're trying to get back in, so I was working on that. But I wanted to ask you, when you were in that room and you saw these things and this thing appeared, she said she'd been held down and raped.
But not at that time. Okay, when we first met her, she said that there were three entities, three male entities. Two held her down, the third one raped her. Now, what's really intriguing about that, because my background is psychology and physiology, is, okay, she had three male children. She had a very tempestuous, very volatile relationship with them. It was horrible. And so it gets a little odd psychoanalytically, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we didn't doubt for one second there was phenomena there, and we knew we weren't hallucinating, because you have 25, 30 people in a room, and something causes them to hallucinate at a mass level. The chance of all of us hallucinating the same way is about 1 in a trillion. It just doesn't work like that. That's Hollywood.
Now, so obviously, after all this, you actually believe that these things occurred.
Yeah, no question. It's the nature of them that we're concerned. In other words, yes, they occurred. Yes, they are paranormal. Yes, they're beyond the scope of science then, let alone now, let alone then. The question is, what is it we're dealing with? We don't know. And here's the thing. 40 years of work, over 4,000 cases. Most of the time, nothing happens. You get and the morbid analogy I'll put forth is this. You go into the airport to go on a vacation, and you happen to have your camera bag under your shoulder as opposed to in your luggage. And you happen to get a plane crash. Now, the probability of that, you're having your camera in your hand, your video camera, and a plane crashes while you're there, able to shoot it, is astronomical. But it does happen. This is the situation we're in.
And with all the people that...
See, people can do whatever. They can exaggerate. They can embellish. And, of course, for the most part, cameras don't lie. But then you have CGI today that didn't exist even in someone's wildest dreams 34 years ago.
Okay, so you've come out with other books.
The core of every great case I've had, except one, is a very, let's just say, neurophysiologically kind of troubled person and emotionally troubled person. And by asking the right questions, we've seen a pattern that's even more disturbing than if it was only a ghost. And the pattern is this. The majority of the people that I've worked with in terms of over the last thousands of people, most of them, whether they're men or women, young or old, they seem to, the poltergeist agent, the phenomena follows them. They seem to suffer from temporal lobe epilepsy or focal seizures. And it's odd, when they take the medication to quell their seizures, the seizures go away, as do the phenomena.
Now, temporal lobe epilepsy, I've done a lot of studies on that and how infrasound will affect it.
Sound can affect it. Smells can affect it. Also, light, flashing lights can affect it.
And people who have it also tend to produce less melatonin, so they have fewer dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so their bodies might, some of these things could be their body, their minds trying to kick this out. Yeah, manifesting.
Now, what's even more intriguing, okay, the majority of poltergeist agents have this problem. But the majority of people who are epileptic or seizure-prone aren't poltergeist agents. So that means in the middle, there's a missing or unknown variable. And no one knows what that is yet, because we don't know. But I'll tell you something. We go out on cases, we take a lot of instrumentation out, and we're now measuring the people as well as the environment, and we're seeing with these people that have had this phenomenon around them for a long time, we're measuring bursts of energy coming out of the body, magnetic fields that should fry you long before anything moves.
Oh, wow. The
body magnetic fields is measured in millions of a gauss, microgauss. We're measuring things, okay, instead of microgauss, we're measuring thousands of milligauss, so 5 gauss, which is about a million times over what it should be.
Right.
From where?
Oh.
And only around these people, not around normal people, meaning people won't have these problems. So something deep within our brain that we don't understand can release, lash out and tear the environment apart. Question is, what is it?
And are you checking when you go out here to these cases to see if there are familiarities between one case and another?
Mm-hmm.
On your website, like, I was looking at some of the stuff from the movie and...
a lot of the stuff on that site's a little dated, but I can tell you, you know, the pattern is really very consistent. You know, a lot of times people either don't want to give us information because they're afraid we'll look at them in the wrong way and, you know, we'll think they're nuts, and we don't. So they either won't be truthful with us or they don't understand the questions. And in that regard, not long ago we were on a case in San Diego, a nice woman. And so we're asking all these medical questions and psychological questions. No, no, no. And finally I said, well, how do you sleep? And she goes, oh, horrible insomnia. And I said, well, what do you take for it, if anything? Oh, she's something called Klonopin. Well, Klonopin is anticonvulsant.
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, she says, I have these muscle spasms. I'm going, well, that's what I was asking you about before. And then she said, you know, you're right. When I take the medication, nothing happens. When I stop taking it, things happen. So we're seeing this pattern over and over and over and over. We don't know what it means, but the bottom line is it seems to be there's three elements that work in concert to produce this. One is the environment, geophysically, the geomagnetic areas, the field's strong, or the electromagnetic energy in the house, the 60-cycle noise is really hot. The second is the unique, individualized neurophysiology, the way the person there is built. And the third is the way their brain or their mind seems to integrate this. So the same way people, let's say you go over to your friend's house, you're healthy, their kids are sick, and you don't get near the kids, whatever, you come home and you get sick, you give it to your family.
Mm-hmm.
We know what that is. That's contagion. Something like that may be occurring here. You go to these environments, there's phenomena going on, the atmosphere is charged with a high degree of magnetic, high amplitude magnetic fields. If you're susceptible, your body picks it up, it modifies you in a way we don't understand, you then leave and you continue to propagate it away from the source. We've seen this over and over, but only with certain people, and we don't know what that certain is yet, because that would take a lot of money, which we don't have.
Now, you see, one of the things I've always been interested in, I have body tics, and I have a problem producing melatonin, but I've never been checked for right frontal lobe seizures, and I've always been meaning to get that checked out to see if that may be why I see some of the things I see.
It could be, but see, we know it's related to these physical phenomena, the psychokinetic.
Right. Event.
Whether it's related to the visual perception or the mental thing where people can, you know, go into an altered state and perceive things at a distance, that's a little different. I mean, there's models for that have come forward over the course of the decades, which are really intriguing and make sense, but it spells out a reality that we have no control over.
Well, Dr. Taft, we're going to have to wrap up in just a minute, but I want to tell people about some of the other books and things you have available. I know Aliens Above.
I wanted to mention our big note. The Aliens Above, Ghosts Below book, that was only offered from 98 to 2000.
Oh.
Right now, we're putting out the world's first paranormal survey online. You go to ghostvillage.com, you get to the site, you hit /, you punch in the word survey, S-U-R-V-E-Y. If you're interested, fill it out. You don't have to give us your name. If you want us to follow up with you, you can fill it out at the end. We need your age, your gender, and answer the questions as truthfully as you feel comfortable. And again, if you want it to be anonymous, there's no problem.
And, of course, there's Paracon.
Yes, Paracon's coming up October 24th, 25th, and it looks hopefully will attract an audience. And one other thing I want to say, that I've worked for 40 years without the aid of a psychic, because some of the ones I've met have been a little too weird even for me. I found one who seems to be normal, I mean, he's a real human being, and he's incredibly gifted. His name is Jack Rourke, and I've never been so amazed, just for many levels. I thought I'd never meet anyone who was gifted and not insane. And you can get hold of him at Jack Rourke. That's JACKROURKE.net. And you'll understand it when people contact him. I've never had the pleasure of working with someone that's normal and is gifted. So, hey, there's got to be someone out there.
Well, you know, it's nice to know there are normal people out there when you've got abnormal people like us on the show.
Right.
But, all right. So, ghostvillage.com/survey, and of course...
No, forward slash survey.
It's forward slash survey.
Survey.
And, you know, Paracon coming up. And thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show, Doctor.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
My pleasure.
Have a good day.
Okay.
Boy, I didn't know what to ask. He just had too much information, Magnus.
It's so much, and actually I was a little nervous. Every time I was talking to him, my microphone would get kind of weird, and I'd hear my own voice.
Well, it should be better now. Your microphone should be better now. I did some work on it. Everything should be working. And next up is the weird, the wonderful, the wild, the crazy, the Charlie Carlson.
Nice.
So stick around, everybody. We will be back right after this.
Ooh.
Beacons of Tomorrow presents Deconstructing Fireflies, a post-apocalyptic short story by the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show's Nathan Schoonover and Christy Peterson. Bees are real, birds are not. Deer heads rot on rooftops under the blazing sun. Chickens explode, and one stricken little boy searches in unlikely places for the souls of the mechanical animals his father creates. This unsettling tale is now available in the speculative fiction anthology Beacons of Tomorrow, second collection. Buy your copy at TyrannosaurusPress.com, Amazon.com, Tower.com, and most online book retailers now. Beacons of Tomorrow, second collection. It's a vision of the future so grotesque, you won't be able to look away.
Hey, this is Nathan S. of the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. When we needed a logo that would tell people what we were all about but was different from anything else out there, we went right to Loki Graphics at LokiGraphicsInc.com. We love the artwork that owner and illustrator Jonathan Sullivan came up with so much, we ordered our t-shirts and banners from Loki Graphics right away. They provided us with high-quality graphic art, screen printing, and helped us pick out the best value for our t-shirts and other products that fit our budget. LokiGraphicsInc.com is the official graphic designer and screen printer for the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. Phone, email, and postal orders are all accepted, with contact information available on their website. Shipping is available for any order, or if you're local, you can stop by the shop and pick up your finished product. Check out Loki Graphics at LokiGraphicsInc.com and tell them the Ghostman and Demon Hunter sent you.
This is Professor Slim King, and you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Oh, we're back on the air. Hey, Magnus.
Hello.
And we're back, and we're back with the bad and the brainy and the weird and the wonderful Charlie Carlson. Welcome back, Charlie.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
We're having a grand old time.
I've been listening to the show. Dr. Taff, he's cool, man. He's got some weird stories there.
Now you got to try and get him to give him some of them to you for the books. Get him to come down to Florida with his psychic.
Yeah, I can't believe that I had to listen to your show to find out that Weird Encounters will not be out until next year. I mean, nobody told me. I wrote for the book. Nobody even told me. I was expecting it to come out before Halloween or something.
Well, that's what I was expecting, too, and that's why I sent them a letter, and they said it will be coming out next September.
The Ghostman and Demon Hunter, always on top of things, offering information.
Yeah, you heard it first here on Ghostman and Demon Hunter.
You'd be surprised how often that happens, you know? We found out that Magnus wears drag, so...
Well, I do, too.
It's special. It feels great.
That's why you call me weird.
I used to have a photo of Magnus in drag, but the FBI came and took it and said that it was... confidential, secret U.S. information, so I lost it.
Yeah, that wasn't the FBI. It was actually Sean in a suit. He fell for it again. So.
Yeah, and I see Sean, he managed to keep off the show tonight, huh? Something about sex fairies or something, kidnapped. What was he talking about?
I think he was kidnapped by sex fairies, yes. I believe
that
was it.
Yeah. That's weird. What is a sex fairy? I'm out in the woods.
Don't ask. I don't want to know.
I think it's a nymph, but in that case, I think Sean... We've kind of decided that since Sean describes them as poorly dressed, dirty people with bottles and brown paper bags in their pockets, that he's just running across... Oh, Charlie, what are you working on, Charlie? I know this is a big month for you. You've got some big stuff coming up.
This is a busy month for all of us that's in the weird business, you know, and I'm just about booked every day doing something. We got a couple of big shows that we're doing, stage shows, doing a big one at the Museum of Arts and Sciences in Daytona Beach on the 25th called The Night of the Paranormal, which we do an illusion show on stage. We got a laser light show, and we got all kinds of weird folks, from mediums to psychics to my weird Florida sideshow exhibits. That's the big one. And then I've got several book signings. And I'll be glad when October's over with, because I really get slammed during October. But it's a lot of fun, too, you know, and I get to meet a lot of weird folks. And then the next thing I go into is filming a PBS one-hour show, which is going to be on the Florida PBS network. It's going to be a weird Florida travel show. So I'm going to have a lot of fun doing that, and we'll start shooting that sometime in January, I guess. So I'll be revisiting a lot of the weird places that's in the weird Florida book, and some new places that, you know, when you write a book like this, you got all these readers that come up with their own personal encounters, you know, that you would never have heard of if it had not been for being an author. And that's really what makes these books. It's not the writers that write these things. It's the people out there, just like your listeners, you know, that have their own personal stories to tell. So, you know, they're very valuable to any of us that are in this business, because without them, a lot of this stuff would never surface. But it's, you know, the weird business is fun. And what can I say, you know? I mean, without it, we wouldn't have a show like yours, see?
Well, that's
true. We're either paranormal or abnormal. I don't know which.
Well, we're afternormal, I believe.
Is that what it is?
We're afternormal people. And
I was glad to be not normal. I really want to know that right now.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Taft reminded me of something. We was talking about that lady being held down on the bed and raped and all. There was a guy that told me a story, and the story sounded so legitimate. I mean, I interviewed him 3 or 4 times, and he had the same story to tell. He said that...
You promised Sean you wouldn't talk about that.
Well...
The names have been changed.
That's about sex fairies. He said a woman ghost came in and climbed his bones every night, and I said, well, you know, do you need somebody to experiment there? You know, I could take your
I'll
place.
Step in for science.
For science, yeah, that's what it was.
You're a giving man, you know that, Charlie. You really put yourself forward, I tell you, it's amazing.
Well, it's, you know, somebody's got to do it.
It's altruistic. You really are an altruistic man, I tell you.
I like to get to the bottom of these things, you know?
Or the top, depending on how the ghost comes at you, right? I know.
So anyway, he told a story that, you know, I interviewed him. Sometimes you can trip people up in an interview, you know, but, man, he just told his story, and he was married, and his wife told the same story. She said she came in on him one night, and he was jumping around in the bed and claimed that was a female ghost on top of him. So,
I've tried that story when people have walked in on me, and it doesn't work.
I've tried some other weird stories, too, that just was so far-fetched nobody would believe me anyway. But yeah. Then Dr. Taft also brought up this poltergeist thing. You know, with everything out there, from big birds to the Mothman to alien abduction to orbs to ghosts to Bigfoot and skunk ape and all the rest of these crazy things, you expect to walk out in the yard and just be jumped by all of these critters, you know. And
instead, it's only Sean.
Yeah, but I never see one, you know. It's I want to see one of these big birds that they talk about flying around out there in the Southwest. Or,
the Thunderbirds and stuff? Yeah,
the Thunderbirds.
You know, it's funny. You'd think there'd be a lot more. With everyone now, their cell phones have cameras, videos. When this was starting to come about, like with the cell phones and just the small pocket-sized cameras, really good, you know, image capturing abilities, I, for a while, thought this is going to be it. This is going to be when will it finally capture Bigfoot on a film, because everyone's going to have a camera in their pocket. Or, like, the big Thunderbird. Someone's not going to see it. They'd be driving down the road and doing it. And I still hear the stories of guys like, yeah, I saw this. Did you take a picture? Oh, I didn't think about it. And I'm kind of nervous. It's giving me a little bit more a feeling that maybe it's not as amazing as I once thought. Maybe this isn't as frequently happening. But it's amazing. I thought there would be a lot more photo proof now, thanks to everyone having a cell phone with a camera in their pocket. But
Well, I thought the same thing, you know, and maybe it is, if you're driving around the road and you've got a camera laying in the seat or in the glove box or something like that, and you see something like that, you only have a few seconds. I mean, if you're privileged to see Bigfoot run across the road in front of you, you're so shocked when you see it, I would imagine, that maybe you just don't think that fast to grab the camera, and then you got to aim it and all and turn it on or whatever. You know, so I can understand situations like that, but I've heard of people that, you know, watch something that went on for several seconds, which would have given them enough time if they had a camera to take a picture. But
yeah, of course, I guess, like, if you're like me, I would be, you know, I don't want to miss a second. Like, I don't want to reach, like, fumbling in my pocket, I guess, to do it. But there actually was a research group I was working with for a while. I was out in the Midwest, and I don't want to say the name because it kind of screwed some people over. But they actually were offering disposable cameras to whoever would want them, and the idea was that everyone, this is before digital cameras were as prevalent and cell phone cameras, that they had the idea is if you're going to be going to areas, they would cover, they'd send you like two or three disposable cameras in the idea that if you capture any footage, they have rights to it. So it was like spend $10, maybe get $100 back or $1,000, whatever it was. And it was actually kind of a clever idea. It didn't pan out right because they were greedy people and wanted to kind of screw some people over. But it was kind of an interesting idea, and they were always – the guy who set it up was kind of interesting because he had the idea is like have a camera in your pocket at all times. If you see something and you don't have a camera taking a picture, then we'll bring – like, you know, you sign some paperwork, they say you had to take a picture. You got to pay them back for the cameras and something else too, whoever it was.
Right.
But
then you got the people that would take a picture of everything from a shadow to a light or whatever, you know, because you got the types that will that believe that every bump in the night is a ghost, or every light in the sky is a UFO, and that's simply not the case. You know, about 80% of this stuff can
That's not the case? You mean I have to get rid of all those photos
now,
I have?
I'm sorry to tell you that, but that's not the case. You know, only about 20% of it really intrigues me, because the rest of it is just like that Georgia Bigfoot hoax, you know, that somebody's either pulling a hoax or somebody's misinterpreting something, or there's some other answer there. But there is the 20% in all of this stuff that I think is really worth investigating, because something's going on there and people are having experiences they can't explain. That's
now, 20% seems high to me. That doesn't sound bad. I guess maybe I get older I get, the more skeptical I get. But I'm having myself, if it's being 5 and 10, I would be amazed if the stuff I hear. Maybe I hear more crap than people, but
see,
I don't know.
That's the way I am, because when I first got into this, and I've been doing this stuff for years, I believe probably 90% of everything I was hearing. And then I start interviewing people like a fella in Orlando, outside of Orlando, who wanted to come over and hear his story about how he witnessed this UFO hovering over a golf course. And it was a golf community with about like the 200 houses around the golf course. And I said, well, did anybody else see this thing? And he said, no. He sounded legitimate. I mean, he was very articulate and everything. And I said, well, what did this thing look like? Well, he described the typical flying saucer. And I said, so nobody else seen this thing? This was 9 o'clock in the morning. He said, no, I was the only one. And I said, well, have you had any other encounters like this? And he said, yeah, the giant chicken on my way home one night. I said, what? He said, a giant 14-foot-high chicken on the corner just down from his house. And so then the...
Now, did he know there was a chicken restaurant on the way home and that they had just
that's
put
what
that
said
out?
He's offering coupons for the cut place on the corner, you know. They have a little sign.
I said, giant chicken. He said, yeah, just like the one I saw in Jersey before I moved to Florida. And I said, oh, my God. You know, that's when he fold up my riding tablet and leave, you know.
It's funny. I've met a bunch of people that way. It's odd how some people just have these stories that you kind of wonder if they believe that what they're telling is true. I mean, if it is, that's more power to them, but I don't. I mean, sometimes I deal with some people that they're just questing for some sort of attention, and yeah. If that's what trouble is now, because like with the way the internet is, you'll find some people that I've actually had some odd sort of stalkers that came about following our groups, and they had everything from seeing shadow people every day to aliens laying in their backyard picking their tomatoes, kind of thing. It was just. You know, you realize, like, if you're this important, go out and buy 20 webcams, put them around your house at all times, and you have your own TV show. You can just go to MTV and, like, this is what happens every day. You'd be famous, you know.
Here we are. We're deliberately going out trying to see something, and we never see anything, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I have had experiences. Actually, in my life, I've had, I think, two things that I can relate that was really weird and unexplainable. One was when I was about 14 years old, I was camping out in the woods with some other boys, and we were running around the woods at night real late, and we came out on the highway, and there wasn't too much traffic at that time of the night on this road, and we saw something in the moonlight, very moonlight night, standing on a rise in the highway about 50 yards in front of us, and this thing was absolutely tall. It looked like a large, hairy man.
And it wasn't me, so you know.
Okay. It wasn't you, it wasn't Sean, and you know, but even though it looked like you, but but it was, you know, I would describe it as the way people describe Bigfoot. And this thing leaped over a barbed wire fence and took off through the thickest swamp, and no sane human would have done that. And we just called it a wild man. And shortly after that, there was newspaper articles began appearing for that general area of sightings of what they were then calling the swamp ape, which today they call it skunk ape, which is Florida's equivalent to the Sasquatch creature. So I think that that's probably what we saw, or what, you know, what people see and call it the Bigfoot. But you know, that was when I was 14. So, you know, thinking back, you know, everything seems to be bigger in my mind. You know, this thing may be even bigger in my mind and my memory than what it really was. But that was one thing. The other thing was, not too many years ago, I had inherited a table through my mother, who was a medium, and she got it from my grandmother, who was also a medium, who got it from her friend, who was a medium, and that lady died. So this table is over 100 years old, and the original medium used it for table levitation, table wrappings, and what have you.
Well, see, I inherited a table from my mother, but she's a small.
And I got my table, it's an extra large, so it works out funny that way.
My grandmother's actually a large, but she called herself a medium. But I decided I was going to test the qualities of this table to see if I could get it to do anything, just because it had been in the hands of so many mediums. So I arranged with some of my people, there was four of us, we took the table to Casadega, Florida, which is a spiritualist community, and I employed two mediums to hold a seance while we sat around the table. Now, the mediums, I would not allow them to touch the table. They had to sit away from the table. This was back in 1996 that we did this. We sat there for about an hour with our fingertips on this table. It was a very small table, only about, the top was about 24 inches by 24 inches. Anyway, after about an hour, this table actually rose up off the floor and kind of wavered. And we're looking under the table to make sure somebody wasn't lifting it with their foot or something.
Yeah, after an hour, I may get a little bored myself.
Yeah. But we were not doing it. This table actually rose up off the ground, or off the floor there, and this lasted for, I would say, 4 or 5 seconds, maybe 6 seconds, and then it kind of gently set back down on the floor. We just sat there looking at each other. And then not too many years ago, I think about a year ago or 2 years ago, Weird U.S. came into Casadega, the two Marks that host the program, and I met them over there, and they were going to do a piece on Casadega and spiritualism. So they got involved with some mediums sitting around a large dining room table, and they actually showed that on their program, of how that dining room table rose up and almost... push one of the marks into the wall. But I don't think they really believe that it was spirits. They're still skeptical about how it was done. I don't know that it was spirits. You know, the mediums would say, yes, that's spiritual energy that's doing that. Maybe it might be some kind of psychic kinetic energy
that's being emitted
by us that's causing it to happen, or some other force, you know. Mm. All I know is that it happened.
It's always weird how a lot of people instantly jump to the idea of ghosts and everything else. I mean, that's been the human, you know, way since the 16, 17, 1400s. Somebody not experienced the ghost. You know, even if it was, you know, say if the power of the human mind, you know, like poltergeist activities, as they say, you know, our own human energy just, you know, putting something out in a weird way. We quickly jump on it as, you know, ghosts or whatever else it is. You know, it could be, you know, the power of the human mind. You never know. I was amazed.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a magician, so I do a lot of illusions, and mm-hmm. not too long ago I did a lecture on unexplained phenomena with a group that was they were already primed to believe in everything that I had to say, you know. So I demonstrated that they shouldn't believe in everything, and what I did is I used a couple of psychic experiments in there, which was nothing more than illusions, and they were fascinated because they felt that they had collectively energized these blocks that I had sitting there and caused one of them to move. Well, I can't tell you how the trick's done, but it's nothing more than a trick. But my point was, is that there's a lot of illusions in life. You know, every day we encounter some sort of an illusion because it's not exactly what we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful of that. And it gets right back to what I said earlier, is that every light in the sky is not a UFO, and every bump in the night is not a ghost. And you have to be aware that sometimes what you see is not really what you think it is. You know, it can be a play with lights and shadows or any number of things. So,
now, did you ever go back and try doing that table again? I mean, did you already read some of the mediums?
I'm going to do it pretty soon. This fall, I'm getting together a group of people, and I'm going to see what I can do with that table. I'm also going to experiment with an Ouija board, because there's all these stories about the evil powers that come out of the Ouija board.
The Demon Hunter here will definitely vouch. He's against Ouija boards. I've actually used them many times, and it's funny how you were describing how the table lifted up, anything else. I will actually say that I had a similar experience with a Ouija board in the piece itself, you know, the object you hold, put your fingers on. We were at a location, and we're testing it out. I don't use it often. This was back 10 years ago when I was much younger with much more hair. It was sliding around like it looked like it had a mind of its own under people's fingers, and everyone on the board I knew and trusted. There was my group. And the board, it actually was sliding so fast, which we couldn't even, you look like it was a hyperactive child with candy in his hand. He was just that fast on the thing. It fell off the board. It slid off the board. And before we could even do anything about it, two pegs had fallen off there. And before we could do anything about it, the other side came up and it was off the surface for, you know, a split second, but it actually, the other side came up, slid across the center and sat back down the center, right back into the center of the board again. And I would vouch for it. I mean, some people say, well, maybe the guy in the corner was pushing harder to bring it back up, whatever it was. But the group I was with, I vouched for them. They were good. And I had seen the thing itself that, what's it in the center called? I forget what it is. The pointer? I don't know what to call it.
The planchette or something.
The planchette.
Like that.
Yeah, that's it. I can't pronounce it, but I'll say that's the word.
Which you can use a tumbler or a glass or anything.
Yeah.
And that
actually did. I mean, it was a rather weird experience. And if I wasn't there, I wouldn't believe it. And I was actually one of the guys on the board, and I could vouch that it would go so fast away from me. Like, and speaking, that it would come off people's fingers. It was at one point we're joking around. It was moving faster, like, you know, coming out of our hands, moving without us even being there.
See, I'm not against Ouija boards. I just think that they get overused by people who don't know how to use them.
Yeah, exactly. We approached it with a scientific mindset. We for another day I can tell a story, but we actually had a problem with one that my brother, he had something that seemed like it followed him around. It's actually enough that my brother, who's a big hulking man, who's a cop now, would sleep with the nightlight on, because actually something kind of happened. And so I tell people don't mess with him, and he's gonna kick my ass for me telling a story to the listeners here. But he's my little brother, so I gotta make a public spectacle of him sometimes. That's my job, being an older brother. But I can say that it's interesting to see something that happened. I if you do something with the table, let us know. Videotape it. Take all angles possible.
Because sure
I'd love to have a video of that up here on the Ghostman and Demon Hunter, you know, .com, the, or ghostanddemon.com. I have my family down in Florida. If I'm ever in that area, if you need someone else to hold, you know, put a finger on the table, let me know. I'm all for that.
Well, if you ever get down this way, come by and see me. I'm only 15 miles from Casadega, where all the mediums are, and I know everybody over there. So
nice.
We can have a lot of fun.
I have family over on the Tampa Bay side of things, and some dispersed amongst everything else too. So I'm always down there, floating about and trying to find skunk apes and everything else. But it's an amazing area. It's such an odd state. So
yeah, we got a lot of weirdness here.
Charlie. For years, Chrissy P has been trying to get me to move to Florida. And I kept putting it off, but now after talking to you and the professor, and I've got my friends from Encounters Paranormal Radio down there, Tim Yancey and Jason, I want to move. Plus, there's Disney World. I want to move to Florida.
But the trouble is, though, remember that also down there, they have cockroaches that have voting rights. Just so you know, they're big enough. They actually have license plates on them. They're big.
They fly, too. They put up those little red lights on top of towers so the cockroaches don't fly onto them.
Exactly. Actually, when the airline get overbooked, they actually use the larger cockroaches for smaller children. They put them on the plane and fly it. It's actually really well.
You got it right.
So if I'm ever in there, I got to check it out. And when Nathan finally moves down there, I'll sleep on his couch for a couple days and do this stuff.
My couch only sits two people, Magnus. I can't see how you would be able to fit on it.
Oh, darn, that's right. Extra large.
Charlie, you got so much coming up with all these events and stuff. Tell us again where people are going to see you. We're going to be wrapping up in a few minutes, but I want people to get out and see you at these events.
October the 25th at the Daytona Arts and Sciences Museum for the Night of the Paranormal. I'm producing it and doing almost everything in there. And then several book signings. You go and Google my name on the Internet, and I'll pop up on a whole bunch of websites there. And so we're going to be everywhere in the state doing something during October.
And where can people find all this stuff?
Well, they can Google it. They can go spookhunters.com, weirdwriters.com on my page on that one. Usually if you put my name in there and put Weird Florida, it'll come up with wherever I'm at on there. So
you know, I actually did that to find your website, Charlie. Entered your name, had it come up. You take over like 3 pages of Google. You're big out there.
Yeah, that's weird, ain't it?
Well, you have like a dozen books out, don't you? My family's from, I have some family down in Florida, and they actually it's funny, I've seen some of your stuff written on their coffee table. That's actually funny how I recognize your name. You've done like a dozen different things, haven't you? Like smaller books.
I used to do a lot of history books, and I got nobody read my history book. I started writing the weird stuff, and everybody read it, so I don't know how many copies Weird Florida has sold, well over 100,000, and I had a Strange Florida, which 10,000 copies on it, and
I believe that's the book I saw actually. I have family that are into this thing as well, and they search out. And, you know, back then it was very hard to find a lot of stuff, so they've always got every book possible. Now it's getting more prevalent, they're pulling, you know, to find them easier. But
yeah,
I think they actually.
Books are for sale on spookhunters.com web store or Shadows in the Dark web store. They carry almost all of mine. But
of course,
we do a lot of DVDs and documentaries and stuff too.
Of course, they can find you at www.weirdus.com because
I'm
part of the Weird US family.
Yeah, I'm part of the Weird US series of folks, and Lord knows where else they can find me. I mean, there's some websites out there have me saying things I didn't even say.
Yeah. The wonder of the web. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's the magic of the Internet. It's amazing how it hasn't started wars yet.
Oh, I don't know. There's a couple theories about that, too.
Well, that's true.
Most people know me from Blair Witch. I was Professor Morehouse in The Curse of the Blair Witch back in 99 when it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, so that got me in. That was my movie debut. You
know. Actually, it's funny, when I was searching up your name for the show here, everything else, I saw that, and I suddenly came rushing back at me. I'm like, oh my God, That's him.
I actually have that on video. I'm going to have to pull out the old video, dust off the VHS, and pop that in and look at it now.
It doesn't look like me. They got big old thick glasses on me, you know. I'm supposed to look like a folklore historian or something.
But you still have a mustache? That's the key, because you have a mustache. Okay, good, because I hate to lose the mustache. The mustache and the hair, I got to say, they work on you.
That's actually an eyebrow. It just fell down there.
Oh, really?
Charlie, and of course there's the other movie you were telling us about last time.
Oh, that's Henry Blackheart is Dead, we put that out on DVD for sales through ghost hunting websites, and you can find that on spookhunters.com and some of the others. And it's only a 43-minute spoof on ghost hunts, and it's really funny. And I produced that one, and now it's gone into some small independent movie theaters. So it's being shown on the big screen in Florida in three or four places. So it got a little bit more attention than what we expected out of it. But we had a lot of fun doing that one. And I'm in it. I play a journalist in there by the name of Andrew Merritt. And Owen Slider is in there. He's the America's Skeptical Ghost Hunter. And he's quite funny. But we had a lot of fun doing that one, and I've done a lot of other documentaries and stuff, and I've been a consultant to a lot of the things you see on cable TV, and unfortunately none of them pay too well.
Isn't that the truth?
Pay anything.
Oh, he gets paid just in pain and suffering.
Yeah.
We were talking to the doctor earlier there, and he was saying how nowadays, you know, Dr. Taff, about how if you can't make money at it and you can't kill people with it, it's just not worth doing.
That's right. Well, the weird business is good business, though. I mean, look, we got 38 ghost tours operating in the state of Florida, and they're all charging like anywhere from $10 to $20 a head for people to walk around for an hour and be led by a
38 ghost tours?
Yeah, 38 ghost
That's
tours.
Almost as many as they have in Gettysburg.
So, you know, and then you got some guy selling a ghost in a bottle in St. Augustine.
That's
the seat of the paranormal, you know. There's a lot of haunted places in St. Augustine. And
you go to St. Petersburg, that's where the Scientology is or something else? So, there's a lot of interesting people in the state of Florida. There you go.
Oh, yeah. A lot of weird folks here. Eccentric.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan's down there. I know that.
Yeah, all the weird guys come down here, you know.
I'm headed there, so yeah, it's true.
He's headed there, you know, so, you know.
So come on down and see Charlie Carlson on his floating table, right? That's what we're going to quote right now on the internet, so people can...
There you go, yeah. We're going to float that table again.
Yeah.
Charlie, it's always great to have you on. I know this is your busy month. When October's over, we're going to have to get in touch with you because we want to hear how your wild and crazy month went.
You do that. I'll be listening for you.
All right, everybody. Charlie Carlson, big month for Charlie. Check him out. Google him on the web. I can't even remember all the...
Just Google me. I love to be Googled.
And weirdwriters.com, Charlie Carlson. WeirdWriters.com, Carlson. You can find him there.
Master of the Weird.
Master of the Weird. So, Charlie, thank you so much for joining us.
Been fun, guys. Take care now.
We'll talk to you soon. Magnus, we are actually running well out of time here. We got to wrap up.
We're going over, aren't we?
Yep, we're going over, and we've got to wrap up on time here and finish up the show. So we got to take this chance to thank everybody for joining us here for the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Do your stuff. So thank them all. I'll say thank you guys for listening. Thank you for having me back. And now it's back to you. Go ahead.
Magnus, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And everybody, be sure to check out our website at www.ghostanddemon.com. Log into our forums. Sign up because we really want to hear from you. And don't forget, next week we'll be bringing you interviews from the Mid-South Paranormal Conference. I'm looking forward to that. And then the following week, hopefully, we'll have some stuff for you, maybe from Haunted Hickory. And you can always check out this show if you missed any part of it, or any of our Ghost Man and Demon Hunter shows.
Yeah, hear our voices again, the sexy voice. Yeah.
Planet Paranormal, Podomatic, Podcast Alley, iTunes, Mediafly, Podbean.com, Blueberry, Podcast Pickle. And, of course, ParaX Radio and the Black Vault Radio Network. And we can also be found on the Podfeed community. So check
and
them all out.
In your dreams.
And in the words of the great Sean Burris, don't go changing, Ghost Hunters. We won't. We love you. Good night.
Good night.
So say good night to the bad guy.